Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new season of Iraqi Voices. This is your host, Hassan Haddad. Iraqi Voices is a podcast that showcases authentic perspectives and insights about current developments in Iraq. Iraqi Voices is produced by 1001 Iraqi Thoughts. It has been 3 years since we last recorded an episode, and a lot has happened both inside our country and in the region. I want to delve deeper into Iraq's situation as we find ourselves in a very fluid regional dynamic. What is Iraq focused on while the world's eyes are on the Arab world? How have the priorities of the political class changed, if at all? With elections around the corner, what can we expect? To discuss this, I am joined by Ali Al-Mawlawi, who specializes in Iraq's political economy. Also here is Mohammed Al-Wa'ili, contributor to 1001 Iraqi Thoughts, focused on development and reform in Iraq. Last but not least is Hamza Haddad, an adjunct fellow at the Center for New American Security and editor at 1001 Iraqi Thoughts. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Hassan.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Ali, why don't you start us off and bring us up to speed? Over the last 3 years, it seems like Iraq has fallen out of the headlines. People are more focused on other things happening, either globally or regionally. But a lot has been happening. Why don't you catch us up on the main things that have happened politically?
So I'd say fundamentally what we've seen in the last 3 years is what I describe as a stability dividend, whereby there's been a sustained period of political stability that's absent of any major political paralysis for the country, in addition to a very good overall domestic security climate, despite all the regional turmoil and violence. And that's created a very different dynamic in Iraq compared to the previous two decades. And what I think fundamentally has happened is that the ruling elite, the coalition of elites that govern the country, have recognized the collective benefit of an uninterrupted period of continuity that's free from political violence. And that's something that I think the elite want and seek to preserve, because fundamentally it enables them to safeguard their own party and personal interests, be they political or economic. And so I think that we can talk about this period as one that is qualitatively different to the ones that preceded it.
All right. So Mohammed, Ali talks about the stability dividend. Are we able to say that the entire political class is bought into this, and so their best interests lie in a stable and secure Iraq?
Thanks for this. It's actually a very important question here. I do think that the political elite is realizing the benefits from stability. And from a systems perspective, I think a lot of efforts have been put into stabilizing the country, which would not show in the past because of external factors and that were basically putting Iraq on a very unstable basis. But eventually, these efforts are starting to show. And the political elite realizing that crisis and managing through crisis is not necessarily effective anymore. And so now there seems to be a competition, a race towards who provides more stability, who is more engaged in reconstructing, who is promising the electorate a more stable and sustained situation.
Hamza, Mohammed brings up a good point, which is the upcoming elections and these promises of stability, who can further the hard-won stability that Iraq is seeing now, and what they can do with it. What new projects, what infrastructure that Iraq is sorely in need of. How can we know these aren't election promises?
This is going to be Iraq's seventh elections, the sixth under the current constitution. But we haven't yet seen an election where policies are really debated. We started to see in 2021 slogans around development and construction, and we're seeing that again in 2025. However, like you said, how much are these just slogans and how much are we going to see on the ground? Remains to be seen. There's no doubt we're seeing a lot of development across Iraq, roads being paved, bridges being built, new highways. However, that's something that Sudani is going to be running his campaign on, but that's not really, you know, an electoral policy that's one can really debate amongst the different candidates and parties. So we've yet to see political maturity in terms of policy debates come elections. It is just at the moment slogans.
I completely agree, because other than Prime Minister Sudani, who is one of the biggest benefactors of the stability of the recent past and is a recipient of one of the biggest stability dividends, as Ali said, he is really letting the physical work of the last 3 years speak for himself, his government, its accomplishments, including the roads, bridges, and overpasses, and what Iraqis can expect more of if they vote for him, to the point that the coalition that he is heading in the upcoming election is using a crane for its election campaign logo. So he and his party want to portray that they're the ones that get things done. They're the party of construction, of the future, getting things done, whereas you're absolutely correct. Others, especially those outside of his coalition, have regressive messages and simplistic ones that speak to tribalism, ethno-sectarian identities, and things like that. And it's really unbecoming, because these are the seventh elections and people have moved away from sectarianism and identity politics. Yet nobody's really debating policies. How can we get out of this, Ali?
I haven't seen any real differences in policy terms between the competing blocs, but I think now the center of the debate is about who's best placed to preserve the stability gains that Iraq has benefited from over the past 3 years. But of course, a big part of that is external, in the sense that oil prices have been quite high for most of the last 3 years. And so the government and the ruling coalition have profited from this significantly. And these massive state budgets have included huge amounts of spending on capital funds, which obviously translate into rent-seeking opportunities for the ruling elite. But I think an area of policy debate that is absent right now, that really needs to become front and center, is the issue of corruption. Because in my view, when you have a system whereby the elite have become very sophisticated at how they contain the threat of political violence, because of 20 plus years of experience dealing with each other and developing informal rules for how to share the spoils of power, the cost of stability often comes with a huge amount of corruption. And I think if we genuinely aspire to democratic ideals with rule of law at the center of the political system, we need to be concerned with the scale of corruption that's currently taking place. And we should think of corruption not just as an economic issue. You know, often corruption is spoken about in the sense that it undermines long-term economic growth and that it impacts the investment climate. But for me, fundamentally, corruption is a moral issue, because when you have systematic corruption at the elite level, that will inevitably trickle down to the rest of society. And if we consider state building holistically, we also have to then think about society and what kind of society we want to flourish in our country. And of course, corruption is a problem in every country in the world, but the scale of corruption varies from one country to another. And I think that finding a way out of this cycle of corruption is a huge part of the challenge for Iraq.
Mohammed, Ali talked about very important concepts such as democracy, rule of law, combating corruption, the impact on society. What efforts can the government and or the political elite put into effect that would help increase combating corruption and enhance oversight bodies that exist?
I'm going to go back to what Ali said. Keyword was here, holistic. I do not think that the political elite nor the government has or will have in place a program and efforts to sort of combat corruption. But what matters more to me is that people are having an issue with this continuous way of doing things in Iraq, and gradually they're rejecting corruption. And you can see this with people. So I have more hope in people actually putting more pressure on the government and the elite to change their ways of doing things, especially when it comes to corruption. And I think people are seeing the fruits of stability, and they realize and they believe strongly that the only thing that is going to undermine all of this is actually corruption, and maybe other factors that come from outside of the country. But they realize that it's corruption that holds the country back. And I think over time, they will put more pressure on the government and on the political elite, and then the elite will sort of give in to that pressure. Because I do not think that the current political elite will change the way it does things. And this is actually the purpose of democracy, is to let the people actually lead the way and to put pressure and to hold the elite accountable.
And just to add to that, I think that the real challenge is to convince the ruling elite to think beyond the stability dividend and to consider the democracy dividend, which yields far greater returns, in my opinion, over the long term. And this is, for me, the biggest challenge. If we think of a liberal democracy in the sense of two pillars, elections, peaceful transfer of power, in addition to rule of law, then what we're really missing in Iraq is genuine rule of law, whereby nobody, including the ruling elite, is above the law. That, for me, is the missing piece of the puzzle. And without it, it won't yield this democracy dividend.
Hamza, both Mohammed and Ali talked about time and effort being required to move things in the right direction in terms of rule of law. What can be done to incentivize the very same people who are benefiting from the current status quo to shore up the efforts of combating corruption, ensuring that nobody's above the law, etc.?
I think the only answer to that is the public holding them accountable. We saw in 2019, when we had nationwide protests in Baghdad and across most of southern Iraq, the people came out and held the political class accountable, you know, whether it was for consociationalism, corruption, their foreign policy leaning towards one side, closer to the other. That was a healthy development amongst the Iraqi public, in that they were going to hold their elected government accountable, not just at the ballot box, but throughout. And then we're starting to see more development of that, to be honest. We've in the last couple of elections, we've had boycott movements. But after 2021's results, where we saw a lot of newly established political parties, some of them born out of the protest movement, a lot of independents, we're starting to see a difference in the thinking of some of the Iraqi public that, you know, maybe we tried boycotting, we sent a message, but maybe there's another way. And that's, you know, to have more representation in the legislative branch of government, to hold them accountable. And we're seeing some of that debate today amongst Iraqi civil society, of claiming that, you know, whether you want to boycott or you don't, you have every right to do either one, but that maybe if we get more people that think like us in parliament, then we can have more accountability, which is something that I personally am in favor of. But as we've seen, and this is not to be too negative, but we did see a regression in the form of the electoral system we'll be having. It's no longer 83 districts. It's going to be back to province-wide districts, which makes it harder for individuals, independents, to run in elections and win seats. It reinforces the idea of having to form larger parties, coalitions, which tends to favor the established elite. That's part of the long-term struggle that Iraq has of of combating corruption, of holding the political establishment accountable. But the fact that we're having this debate, I think, is important. And the results that we see is going to once again shape the point of view of future elections moving forward.
So we have province-wide districts, and we have an election law that favors large parties. Because of these two things, what hope is there in changing things up and shoring up the small d democracy, rule of law, and combating corruption? It seems like the folks who have the biggest say in how things run in the country will want to keep the status quo so that they maintain their levers of economic and political power. What hope is there for us Iraqis for change?
So in political economy terms, you can think of Iraq as a closed access order. And in that sense, it makes complete sense that the elite would put up barriers for new entrants, newcomers who try to compete. So I'm not surprised by the fact that they reverted back to the proportional representation system with the larger districts. But I do think that there are signs that Iraq has transitioned from a fragile closed system to a more mature closed access order. If you look at the elite and the way that they've organized themselves, the way that they coordinate, the way that they manage crises, be they security or political, there's a sophistication to that coordination that didn't exist before, whether that's through the Shia coordination framework or the state administration coalition that includes all the ruling parties. It's actually quite interesting if you look at the way that the coordination framework operates in political economy terms. It's what's considered to be a political organization in the sense that this organization is primarily interested in maintaining order. Because ultimately the function of a state in political economy terms is to maintain stability and order. And it's in the interest of the ruling elite to do that because, as I said, it safeguards their own interests. To make the leap from a closed order to an open access order is a huge struggle. And only a few countries have ever done that actually historically. So as Mohammed and Hamza have said, this is a matter that will take time. And that leap from a closed order system where you have the elite controlling the political and economic spheres to one that is a lot more open and democratic and inclusive, that's a huge task that will require not just political will at the elite level, but also a heightened level of awareness amongst ordinary citizens about what democratic change actually looks like as a process.
Yeah, and I would also like to add something. This might not be what people want to hear, but certain things in democracy need to be organic, and it requires time actually to show the results. The stability that we see here today, this isn't the effort of this government, nor the previous. This is actually effort since 2003. And the rule of law and reduce corruption and all that, it requires time. And with the fact that the government isn't accelerating this process, it falls upon people to put more pressure, as I mentioned. But that process itself needs to be organic and unfortunately requires time. However, on the long term, I do believe that we are moving to the right direction. This might sound optimistic, but we would say the same things like 15 years ago. And it seems to be that we are actually indeed moving into the right direction.
Mohammed, do you think the average Iraqi person has the patience in order to achieve what Ali is talking about, this sense of understanding and bringing about change? Or are they so disenchanted by the entire thing that they're going to be joining boycotts, as Hamza mentioned?
I do not know how the youth will eventually react to the idea of election. However, I understand one thing, which is that It takes some time for even the youth and the people in general to understand how democracy works. And we Iraqis, we have lived through a lot of violence and struggles. And during these crises, it might not have been very clear what the benefits of democracy are. However, I think when stability started to show, the awareness about the value of democracy will also show. And over the years, I do believe that there will be more awareness about why it is actually good to have a democracy. And despite the fact that nothing is perfect, it's still better than the alternatives, especially when we look at the region and we see the developments there. And then we, for instance, we look at our neighbor in Syria and we see what they are going through and we compare ourselves to them and what we went through and what we had to pay in order to achieve this current stability. And a lot of the struggle, going back to what Ali said, a lot of the struggle in the past has been between a system that tries to be representative of everyone, a consensualist system, and between stability. And I think the Iraqi political elite sort of has found the golden ratio, or is trying to find the golden ratio in which it still is regarded as representative, and at the same time also it doesn't happen on behalf or on the cost of stability. And this is an important, I think, development. Again, nothing is perfect, but everything is happening, in my point of view, organically. And what we need to do is we need to stick to the current system, develop it, but not sort of adventure into something else. And this idea, I think, is dangerous and does not serve Iraq at the moment. And this is why I also believe that it's important to make people understand why elections are vital for us. And I hope that Iraqi youth over time develop the sense of duty when they go and vote.
Hamza, can you talk to us about democratic regression, given what Mohammed just said? It seems very important that the youth get out and vote. They see the value in the current system, despite its flaws. But the fact that we are a democracy, we do have elections, we don't know what the outcomes are going to be, we don't know who the next prime minister and ministers and president and all of that stuff. What can we do in this global wave of democratic regression to hang on to the hard-earned gains that Iraq has made?
I think this is where both public and elite need to work together in maintaining the path of Iraq's democratization. Obviously, we know that it was a foreign invader that removed the previous regime, helped install this consensual democratic system that we have today. But, you know, the United States is no longer as involved in Iraq as it once was. So the onus is more on Iraqis to maintain this this democratic system as we continue to mature. Like you said, in a global democratic regression that we're seeing other countries become less democratic. We're seeing democracy not being valued as much around the world. People valuing efficiency over democracy. I mean, this is something that a lot of the Gulf has been investing and in, actually trying to reinforce this idea in the Middle East that you don't necessarily need democracy because they aren't democratic states, but they are efficient and, you know, they're introducing liberalism and they're good allies to the West. And so we have to be cautious of that. We need to be careful not to fall in that trap as Iraqis and to continue to develop our democracy that we can actually be a model that say, no, you can have democracy in the Middle East. It is positive. And Again, you asked me how we can do that. Again, I think civil society leaders need to continue to help educate the public on this. The government itself needs to be reminded that it gains its legitimacy from elections. It has an onus on continuing to educate the public on why that's important. And ideally, we're able to go to kind of, if we bring it all back together, improve governance and tackle corruption, then that will only help Iraq's democratic future.
That makes a lot of sense, Hamza. I agree completely. Whether it's the political elite, it's the civil society, it's the youth, everybody needs to understand that democracy is an ongoing project. It is something that we experiment with, and we don't always get it right, but it's something worth fighting for, given that we Iraqis, over the last 22 plus years, have laid down tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives for. And the fact that we are going into our seventh election after 2003, that's not nothing. That's actually very inspiring. And the fact that we are going in not knowing what the outcome will be, we don't know, is this prime minister going to get a second term or not? Are the current crop of ministers going to hang on to their seats or not? Those are all very positive. And I would say all of these hard-earned gains need to be discussed in light of the role of Najaf. We've discussed external factors, we've discussed internal factors. And one of those internal factors is not only the Marja'iyya, but Grand Ayatollah Sistani. So Ali, can you talk a little bit about this, please?
So if you look at the messaging that's come out of Najaf, particularly over the past 12 months, the emphasis has been on what Iraqis need to do to achieve long-term stability, prosperity, and dignity for the country. And if you look at the ingredients that are reiterated by Najaf, there's an emphasis on rule of law, combating corruption, and consolidating the control of arms under the state. I think these principles are very much in line with the conceptual framework on how to make the leap from a closed system to an open democratic system. And if you look at the way that Najaf has been communicating publicly, particularly during last Muharram, there was an emphasis on the need for awareness and foresight in how we conduct ourselves, both at the elite level and at the general public level. So, you know, the concepts of wa'i and basira were mentioned, in fact, three times in the speech that was delivered by Ayatollah Sistani's representative. And I think we need to realize that there are responsibilities both at the elite level and at the public level in terms of how we take our country to a much healthier and sustainable place.
Yeah. I also think that we need to take into consideration the regional instability that is happening at the moment, and on top of it, the genocide in Gaza. And for Iraq and the region to remain stable and get out of the continuous crisis that is going through, there needs to be more cooperation and coordination in order to stop the genocide. Otherwise, everything that the whole region has worked for, not only Iraq, will be in jeopardy.
I want to thank all three of you for joining me today and sharing your thoughts. Very thought-provoking discussion, and I hope to have each of you back. That's it for this week's episode. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to receive notifications about a new episode from Iraqi Voices. Until next time, take care.